We are on air for Fan for Racing Radio. This is Monday night, July the 24th, and we're here for our Pocono NASCAR race review and our Hot Topic Sound Off. We're going to start in our first half hour with the latest short track news. Then we'll review the Arkham Menards Series race that took place out at Pocono Raceway this past Saturday morning. And we'll include the ARCA East and ARCA West Series update. In the next half hour, we're going to comment on the media interview with the ARCA Menards Series winner, Jesse Love, driver of the number 20 Venturini Motorsports Toyota. Afterward, we're going to review the NASCAR Truck Series race at Pocono. In our third half hour, we'll complete our review part of the show with the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series races at Pocono, and we end our episode with our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off conversation with the Fan for Racing crew, and we do have a full house tonight, so lots to cover here on Fan for Racing Radio. Now, joining me shortly will be our co-host, Sal Segala. I expect him shortly. I know he arrives right from getting home from work, so it takes him a couple minutes to kind of settle in and kind of get things going. But let me go ahead and start with the latest short track news. Three websites that we use to cover our short track news includes Racing America, Flow Racing, and Short Track Scene. From the Racing America website, there's the you can actually watch the ASA Stars National Tour Redbud 400 tonight on MAV TV. So that's from Anderson Speedway. So some of you may be actually watching that. William Byron was actually DQ'd in the Pepper Jack Kennels Twin 100 at Five Flag Speedway. That gave the win to Jeremy Doss. That was 2 days ago that it was posted by Jay Pinnell over at Racing America. So if you want to read all about that, I think it was a post-race inspection that caused the DQ to happen. And so Jeremy Doss was declared the winner in that race. Also, Jesse Bernhagen wins again at Slinger Speedway. That was just 8 hours ago. So a lot to take in there. Then Derek Glutkacki takes a Can-Am 200 victory for an American sweep of the ACT events in Quebec. So we're talking international racing here at Fan for Racing Radio. Lots to take in. I'm going to go ahead and move over here to Flow Racing. Sal's not here yet, so I'm going to continue with some of the news that I see here at Flow Racing. Freddie Rahmer is in pursuit of a high-limit racing glory at Grandview Speedway. So that's a upcoming race that you can read about over at Flow Racing. And the Short Track Super Series Modifieds are set for their Canadian debut. So a lot to read about there. All right, checking to see if Sal's here yet, and he's not. Bill Balog doubles up with All-Star Sprints at Red Hill Speedway, and Justin Grant holds on to win the Indiana Sprint Week at Lawrenceburg Speedway. So pretty cool to see Justin Grant out there racing and winning. Alex Bright is on the mend after he had a hard crash in that Indiana Sprint Week at Lawrenceburg. You can read all about that over at Flow Racing. And the NHRA Northwest Nationals, the results are there from the Pacific Raceways if you want to see the results of those events. The PDRA Pro Stars concludes early at Virginia Motorsports Park of Night. Park's Night of Fire. So the final rounds were over there on Friday. Let's see here. Lance DeWeese and Kreltz Racing parked Rays. So that's kind of big news. If you want to read about that, that's over at Flow Racing. And Nightmare Strikes, Bill Balog dominates the All-Star Sprints at Spoon River. So that's here in Illinois, Canton, Illinois, as a matter of fact, if you want to read more about that. I'm going to head on over now. Again, Sal should be here shortly, but I'm over at Short Track Scene now, and there's a lot to read about there. Tyler Roerig can't be stopped at Berlin. They're talking about the pavement sprint cars there. And then Beans World, Brendan Queen brings a unique energy to the racetrack, a contagious vibe fitting for a driver. So if you want to read about Brendan Queen, there's a feature. He drives in the NASCAR Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Series, if you want to read about that. And let's see, we'll go on to Clark Repeats at WMMP with a rescheduled Saturday pass win. Cole Butcher and J.O. Ruggiero scores the Wilsons 1-2 in the Redbud. And Alex Tagliani dodges bullets to win the Pinties at Toronto. There's also, and we talked about this one before, Ty Majeski making his third Slinger Nationals win happen late in that race. That's one that we've been talking about for a while here. But a lot to read about over there at Short Track Scene as well. I'm expecting, again, for Sal Segala to be here shortly. Let's see what else I can bring up. Doiron DQ leads to Terrace Triumph at Oxford. That's for the Pro All-Star Series. So another DQ giving the win to another driver. With back-to-back Oxford Plains Speedway wins, Terrace is the only Pass North driver to score multiple victories so far this season. That's an article by Jeff Brown over at Short Track Scene. The Cars Tour disqualifies Riggs and KHI after Caraway. That goes back to the end of June, but there is just so much that you can read about in Short Track Scene here on shorttrackscene.com. I'm going to check and see if Sal has sent me any notes. I don't believe I've heard anything from him. Nope, I have no notes here from Sal. Let me check email real quick and see if he sent me an email note. As far as I know, he's going to be here tonight. Nothing from Sal there. So we should be able to hear from him shortly here. Okay, going back to the studio that we have here, let me go ahead and go back to Racing America and see if there's anything else that I can bring up. Christy, okay. A lot of these we've already brought up. Okay, you can enter now for a Racing Memorabilia Mystery Box prize package. Racing America is offering a box prize package and doing several giveaways, and there is a form that you can enter for that sweepstakes. Sign up for our free newsletter and join our growing racing community that's free to sign up. And then you enter yourself into that drawing for the Racing Memorabilia Mystery Box. So that should be fun. So we'll see what happens there. Maybe one of our listeners will win. If you do, we'd love to hear from you. Okay, I know there's a lot of topics that we'll probably be talking about on our Hot Topic Sound Off. Just to kind of preview that very quickly, Denny Hamlin, very unapologetic after his contact with Larson on his path to the Pocono win. And actually, he ended up winning the Coca-Cola 600 exactly the same way, but with Ross Chastain. So a lot of fans were not happy with him at Pocono. we'll talk about it here on our NASCAR Hot Topic Soundoff segment starting at 10 o'clock Eastern here on Bamfa Racing Radio. We have Jay Huseman, Mike Orzel, and Tommy Kraft will be here tonight for us to break that down and give our different perspectives of that finish to the Pocono race. So it'll be interesting. It seems like Denny Hamlin is in the minority in his perspective of what happened there. But we'll wait and see what the rest of our group has to say about that. But we'll definitely be talking about that on our show at 10 o'clock Eastern time. Toby Christie writes a great article, like it or hate it, Pocono is why we love NASCAR. That's a great, he talks about the finish between Hamlin and Larson, Dillon versus Reddick, Priest versus LaJoie, race control versus timing of cautions, and so much that's happening at Pocono. Toby Christie is a new general manager, if you will, of Racing America, so it's interesting to see what his take is on all of these hot topics. So I'd really advise everybody to take a listen, take a read of that article, and believe it or not, he made it. Sal Segala is in the house. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, hi, Sharon. Good evening.
It's good to have you here. My voice needs a break.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so does mine. I need a lot of breaks. It's hot out here.
Yeah, it's been pretty hot here, too, Sal. I've got a swimming pool we're trying to install, and it was so hot today that they're trying to get it done in the evening hours when it's a little bit cooler here. But, man, we've got some hot weather coming, too.
Yeah, I got a friend that just got back from vacation on Friday from there.
Oh, from Illinois?
From Chicago.
Oh, well, that's Illinois.
Actually, she spent 2 weeks in Chicago, did all the tourist stuff.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well,
yeah,
I pretty much have covered the short track news, unless there's something else that you want to add, Sal.
No, not really. I mean,
anything going on in the SRO?
No, still waiting for next race. The only thing I watched over the weekend was the summer showdown at Washington and the first race at for the Southern Super Series at Five Flag Speedway.
Oh, okay. That's the one where William Byron was disqualified?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jeremy Doss got the win. That was a post-race inspection disqualification, right?
Yeah, it was they put a pan they thought was legal underneath the gas tank for safety, and to find out that that pan wasn't an approved part, so they made him they disqualified him for that. And then the summer showdown, Preston Peltier won it. He got DQ'd in tech, and they gave the win to Cole Rev.
Wow, is it my imagination, or are there more DQs than ever this year?
There's a lot of them. A lot
there
of drivers
seems
are pushing
to be a lot of them.
They're blaming
okay.
on the series. They said the series isn't sending out the emails to let them know when they're changing rules, you know, things like that. But I don't know. I had a discussion with a good friend earlier about that, all I told him was, you know what, I agree, and I told him we can agree to disagree.
Oh, okay.
On it. So,
well, on that note, let's go ahead and move over to the Arca Menards Series race at Pocono. Jesse Love was the winner over there, the Sunset Hill Shooting Range 150. Jesse Love scored his fifth victory of 2023 and Saturday Sunset Shooting Range 150 at Pocono. He led 40 of the race's 60 laps during his seventh career ARCA Menards Series victory. Did you get the notes I sent via email, Sal?
Yeah, I got them.
Okay.
They're here somewhere in my email.
Okay.
Oh, here they are. Yeah, I got them. Here they are.
I covered the first one. You can go to the second one.
Okay. Let's do it.
I already did the first one.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess. You know what? It sucks because the race got rained out, and I was going to watch it Friday
Saturday
night.
Morning.
Over here, of course, because we're on West Coast, so it runs like, I don't know, 5, 4, 5 in the morning or something like that.
6:30, yeah.
I get up that early to watch a race. I'm sorry. But either way, congrats to Jesse Love on the win. And anyways, Love moves into a tie for 56th on the 56th on ARCA Menards Series all-time win list with Jim Cushman, two-time series champion, Lee Raymond, 2009 champion, Justin Lofton, wow, and 2019 champion, Christian Eckes.
Wow. Now, keep in mind, they had a full schedule on Saturday, so that was about the only time they had available to run that race.
Yeah, I forgot it was a Pocono.
Yeah. Love extended his lead in the ARCA Menards Series Championship standings, which now stands at 69 points over the runner-up driver, Andres Perez.
Frankie Muniz suffered from electrical issues throughout the day, forcing him behind the wall for 13 laps while the Red Jones Racing Team diagnosed the issue and made repairs. Muniz finished 21st, dropping into third in the series standings, 5 points out of second.
Connor Mozak scored his second runner-up finish of 2023, matching his best career finish set earlier this season at Daytona International Speedway.
And then Andres Perez finished the career best third after leading 16 laps. Perez rebounded from getting hit from behind on the restart with 15 laps to go, which set him sideways and into Connor Mozak and then into Dean Thompson.
Thompson actually finished fourth after earning his first career General Tire Pole Award in qualifying on Friday.
Connor Jones finished fifth, his second top five result of the season, and his fifth finish among the top 10 in five starts.
Venturini Motorsports had three cars in the top five at the finish and two more driven by sixth-place finisher Tony Breidinger and 10th-place finisher Jake Finch in the top 10. Team co-owners Bill and Kathy Venturini celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary at the track on Friday.
Wow.
And what better way to finish an anniversary than with the victory with Jesse Love?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then, wow, 50th anniversary. So it would have been neat if they could have ran the race Friday and if Jesse could have won the race on Friday. But either way, he got on Saturday, so it was still part of a good weekend for the Venturini Motorsports team and family.
Yes.
And Andy Jack White rebounded from losing a lap on pit road to finish seventh, matching his late father, Tony Jackowicz, finish in the 1985 Race of Champions modified race on the now-defunct three-quarter-mile oval of Pocono Raceway.
Cody Coughlin made his second start of this year. He notched his second top 10 finish of the season in eighth. Coughlin finished seventh in his first start of the season at Kansas Speedway, and that was back in April.
And then from there, then we go to Christian Rose, finished ninth. His sixth top 10 finish in 10 starts in 2023.
Both John Garrett and Alex Club from Illinois here, they led the Sunset Hill Shooting Range 150, leading laps in the ARCA Menards Series for the first time in their career. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, then from there, Stephanie Moyer made her second start of the season and scored her career best. Finish in 14th, the final driver on the lead lap.
Now, the next race for the Arkham Menards Series is the Henry Ford Health Systems 200 at Michigan International Speedway this on Friday, August the 4th. The race will be televised on Fox Sports 1 and broadcast on select affiliates of the MRN radio network nationwide, and that will start at 6 p.m. Eastern time. So that was quite a race. I did get to see part of it. And Jesse Love was pretty much dominant throughout most of that race. He was able to bounce back. He talked about how he was disappointed with his finish at Iowa Speedway. And so this was a good shot in the arm for him and a confidence builder.
Yeah, venturing has been tough this season, and, you know, in both the East and the West series. You know, they're bringing good cars to the, you know, to the track. So, with the West, you know, of course, Sean Hingorani is the one that's been driving out here, has been driving it in the West. So, I've been driving for Venturini here on the West. So, it's neat to see Venturini be so dominant.
Well, it's exciting for us to see Venturini spread their wings and race out on the West Coast. They've always been here in the Midwest and the eastern side of the country. So to see them venturing over to the west side of the country is kind of a big deal. They are certainly a big part of ARCA racing here in the Midwest. So now you guys are kind of getting a feel for who the Venturinis are there in the West.
Yeah, we've had them out here a couple, not much, because I remember I was telling you that, now that they changed the Arkham, Arkham Menards Series West, you know, now we see the ARCA cars, but barring the name, when it was just ARCA Menards Series before it came to NASCAR, we never got to see the ARCA Menards Series because they never went past, past Texas. Yeah,
right.
The Midwest, that was it. They stopped, and they stayed over there in your guys' neck of the woods, so we never got to see them. And it's funny, I don't know why they never made a stop. You know, at least one, you know, I mean, they could have went to Phoenix, would have been a good track, a good one-mile track for them to make a stop at.
Well,
but
that's
for some
the good
reason,
news.
That they were,
NASCAR kind of taking over the series. They are kind of spreading their wings out that direction, and I think it's a good thing.
I think it is, too, but I don't know why the series is just hurting. I mean, the car counts are just low compared to what they used to be.
Oh, I know. Well, these things go in waves, so we'll see if we get a turnaround at some point. But do you want to cover the points report?
Yeah, let me get to ARCA Racing. Let's
And we know Jesse Love is at the top with Frankie Munoz 49 points back.
Yeah, so then we got Jesse Love. Yeah, like you said, Jesse Love at the top. Frankie Munoz sitting second, 49 back. And then Andres Perez de Lara is sitting third. Christian Rose is sitting fourth. John Garrett is sitting fifth, and in sixth is Tony Breidinger. Seventh is Tony Constantino. Eighth is A.J. Moyer. Ninth is Jack Wood. And tenth is Brad Smith, rounds out the top ten.
Yeah, even though it's 49 points between first and second, there are some tight battles going on here between some of the positions. For fifth place, Tony Breidinger is just 1 point behind fifth place John Garrett. And then A.J. Moyer is at 149 back, and that's 7 points behind Tony Constantino in seventh place. So there's some tight battles going on. Jack Wood and Brad Smith, they have just 1 point between them. So even though it's not a tight battle at the front, there are some tight battles throughout that top ten.
You know, it's going to be hard for anybody to really catch Jesse Love. Jesse has so much experience in this series. You know, plus racing for the Venturinis. You know, it's going to be hard. I don't think. I mean, Frankie's a good racer. Frankie has a lot of experience with the with more like with the road race, with the road race, the Trans Am series. But Frankie can hold his own. But I just don't think that he's going to have. He's going to need some wins to catch Jesse. Like Frankie says, you know, this is a season for the to learn. So, I mean, I'm sure he's happy being in second place, but. For any other driver to really catch him, it's going to be, I mean,
it's going to be tough.
A wreck. Oh, yeah, a wreck and DNFs. I mean, you know, you can almost count Jesse to be the, you know, this year's Arkham Art Series champion.
Well, we don't want to count our eggs before they're hatched, but I hear what you're saying. We already mentioned that the Henry Ford Health 200 is going to take place August the 4th at Michigan International Speedway. But the next race under the ARCA Menards umbrella is at the ARCA West race. The Shasta 150 will take place July 29th, 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time, out at Shasta Speedway. Any chance you're going to be there, Sal?
No, I'm not going to. It's too far for me to go.
We can watch slow racing. They will have live streaming available there.
Yeah, I'm kind of liking being home on the weekends. This is my second weekend home since the SRL race got canceled because of the heat. And then Irwindale, we don't come back to Irwindale for our regular Irwindale program until the 12th because they have other events that they're running at the track. Plus, they're giving the drivers some time off because of the heat. So, I mean, it's kind of nice to have this time off. And it's hard because I'm used to being in a track. I'm used to being at home.
Right. Well, the next race after the race out at Michigan is on August the 11th, the Reese East 200. That will be the ARCA Menards Series East, and they'll be racing at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. That will be televised on Fox Sports 1. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that is a combination race with the ARCA Menards Series. Let me just double-check that. Yes, that is a combination race with the ARCA Menards Series. So both the East and the main ARCA Series will be racing that race at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park.
Aren't they going to Iowa first?
They already raced Iowa. Iowa's done and over.
Oh, they did, huh? Gosh, you know what? They don't even have the the results or nothing, recap or nothing from the Iowa race.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, I'm here on the
schedule.
Web page right now.
Okay.
That's what I'm asking about Iowa.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on. I do have part of the media interview that they did with Jesse Love after his victory in the Pocono race. And we'll listen to about maybe 7 or 8 minutes of it. It's actually over 13 minutes, but we'll get 7 or 8 minutes of it in, and then Sal and I will comment on the interview. So let's go ahead and get started with that, Sal.
Okay.
Ed Hill, Stream Race, ARCA Menards Series race here at Pocono Raceway, and that's Jesse Love. Jesse, why don't you start us off talking about your win and your run out there today?
Yeah, just really proud of all of our guys for working hard. Couldn't really do much overnight, but, I mean, 2 days ago they got to the shop on Wednesday morning at, 6 a.m. They left the next day at 8 a.m., right? So they were there all night working over 24 hours straight, just trying to get all these five cars, race-winning capable cars to the racetrack on time. just really proud of everybody's effort, working so hard. And I was definitely upset yesterday, you know, not getting the pull to a teammate, something that I can't do right now, trying to set myself up for next year. So I knew today I had to do some, just put on a clinic and do the best I could. Kind of hit some weird lap traffic. I get air moves around a lot here. It's pretty tricky. Like that lost the lead. And then just had to get it back on restarts and then maintain with air being king here. So I think I could still, if I needed to.
You have a question for Jesse? We'll get you.
Kyle Magda, Rowdy Maglite Racing Media. Can you talk a little bit about battling with the two car there? He got around you there, and then he got back around him, and then you were just able to hold off there. I know the 18 got there, and then you were able to basically run him there.
They're packed a lot. Cars, you know, more short run speed with, you know, how they have their pans and their side pans, all that stuff. So I knew they were going to be really fast on a short run. They probably off for a while, and you know, not have them dragged on the straightaways. It's kind of hard to break away from him with how much big of an air we, you know, bubble we punch here. So it was tricky, you know, losing the lead, just you know, miscalculation navigation on my end, you know, getting around that 06. You know, figured he'd just, you know, give me the top. I just went in the middle and wasn't really sure where he was going to go, so just had to go the extreme top. And I wasn't a wreck, but it was pretty sketchy with how slimy it was up there. It hasn't been worked in. It's a bunch of marbles in the crush panel. So we'll have to leave there, and I can kind of I'm in the top. But you have to kind of time your runs, and he wasn't hitting any lap traffic, so I couldn't really, you know, even the playing field out much. But once we kind of got out of clean air, I knew I just had to run my race, you know, talking to Shannon at under yellow about, you know, right from tire wear. Straightways here so long, you can't really get away with much camber. So inside of our tire was, you know, a little worn down, and had to kind of save until that last, you know, 10 lap to ghost in. I just wanted to get as big of a bubble as I could, so that if some craziness happened with a lap car again, that I could still have a bubble, kind of eliminate, you know, all odds kind of not winning.
Process once you fell behind the 2 and 18 car, and like walk me through that strategy on how you was able to come back and get this win today.
Stressful was the 03 was lined up on the front. I was like, oh my gosh, and he got the damn restart of his life, and I was really screaming off of turn one. I was so pumped, and good job to him for getting a good jump, and then he kind of peeled off, and so I didn't really a line, and you know, that was the sketchy part. But yeah, like you said, falling behind here is you know, probably the worst place to do that. A good place like Kansas, you move around, you get around them. Charlotte, you move around. Michigan, you move around. Well, here, you can kind of move around 1 and 2. You can kind of move around. And you're stuck, right? It's tunnel turn. So, so hard to. You have to be a lot, but it's just, them in the air. I knew just have to wait for the restart. That was relevant parts, and I feel like that's what's been my group restarts and stuff like that. So I knew that once I got a restart, I could just work air really hard, and as long as I had positive momentum going into one, and had my headlight out, that he wasn't gonna be able to, like, you know, put on my stuff around. So. Yeah, restarts were the biggest thing, and I think that was kind of what won us the race. You know, obviously you can have a 3/10 slower car or even car, but if you're in clean air, it's huge.
Jesse, Eddie Kalegi, Motorsports Today. I wanted to talk a little bit about lane choice, because at the beginning of the race, we saw it seemed like the outside line was the preferred lane at the beginning. On restarts, and we saw you and Andres go up there. So could you take me through some of the strategy those last two restarts to move to the bottom?
Yeah, I think that, you know, last year, the year on the inside was kind of a sitting duck, because third would always, you know, being me, I would always just pull out and pass the guy in first, make it three wide. this year, you know, I kind of did a little bit of homework on how to not let that happen, and time runs, and how you wave people to come on with it and all that stuff. So, I don't know. I thought that there was it was a lot safer to be there. If you're top of three, you're all the way up in, like PJ, or not, it's not laid down, but that, you know, stained pavement. You're up there in the top of it where it's kind of greasy and such. If you're in the middle, you're where it's worked in. You're on the bottom, you know, it's good. So I didn't want to be top of three. If I thought I was, you know, middle of three, that I could just on bite off in there, and have positive momentum, have side force, and be okay. And also, you can open the block all the way down. But honestly, like, with how good our cars take off and the homework that I've been doing, timing starts and timing stuff, I didn't focus on it. Such like how you're turning off into the corner on throttle here on a restart, that the shortest lane probably always going to win. Like Andreas lift really, really early and give me a, you know, run into one to help me out as well. So I think
setting yourself up for next year. Where are you kind of hoping to be next year? Are you hoping for trucks? Or kind of what that looks like?
19 Cup car would be nice, but I don't think that's going to happen. No, just I got a lot of faith in everybody at Toyota Racing to put me in the right spots. And it's tricky, right? I want to be in the best situation possible. I will say, like, I've kind of followed right behind Corey Heim throughout his last few years of development, and it's been going really well. So I don't expect a lot of that to change. I'm happy at Toyota Racing with everything they're doing for me. And just whatever I'm doing next year, whether it's trucks or Xfinity, full-time, part-time, whatever it is, I know I just got to go, you know, win as many races and make myself a valuable free agent. So I definitely sleep a lot less now. Normally the last few years I've had my deal for the following year re-signed by now. You know, right now I don't. So that's probably why I'm winning a lot of races. But at the same time, it's definitely pretty stressful, and you got to be up on your game.
Okay, Sal, your thoughts about Jesse Love's comments here.
You know what? It was kind of hard. It was going off and on, off and on, off and on. But I did catch some.
Yeah, that's we're getting background noise from your end as well. So every time there's a noise from your end, it blocks out the sound on this side. So I think
okay,
that.
Well, yeah, I don't. There's nothing. I'm here at home alone.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sitting in the.
Anyway, I'm sorry you couldn't hear it.
I caught some of it. I mean, you know, I understand, you know, when you, and all the drivers talk about that, about Pocono, you know, is trying to pass, you know what, you know, it's hard, you know, with the, you know, with the aero packages and stuff like that, you know, the way they need to pass, you know what, it's tough. I mean, it's not like you got, you know, four or five grooves, you know, first of all, it's a buddy-shaped track.
Yeah,
you know,
the
triangle always,
makes a challenge.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, yeah, through the years, it's always raced like that. But, you know, but I mean, you know, I like Ben. You know, he was talking about, you know, he has to, you know, season's not over yet, but he's already looking forward to, you know, what he can do for next season. You know, what he has to do, you know, to market himself, you know, to see what he's got going. He's not waiting till the end of the season or getting closer to it, because it's already close to the end of the season anyway. But, you know, he's already looking, you know, at what he can do, you know, to make this season a lot better, you know, and you know, see what he's got going on for next year. Because you can't stay in ARCA your whole, especially with the backing he has from Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the TRD doesn't want to keep him in the ARCA series, you know, for the rest of his career, so.
True.
You know,
and one thing I enjoyed is that he's a student. He said he took time to study how to make his restarts better. And he really looked at, you know, what he needed to do differently there. And I think that's really good advice to any driver.
Yeah, it is. You know what? You know, and I think a lot of them, I think we talk to the majority 85-90% of drivers, they're all going to say the same thing. You know, they, you know, that's, it's important, you know, especially at this level, you know. It's not like a super late model race or a late model race, you know, where.
Yeah, that's true. So, but Jesse Love, if you remember when he was in the ARCO West, he's won a couple championships. So now he's in the main series, the ARCA Menard series, and leading the points there. I think he's going to be very successful as he continues up that NASCAR ladder. I think his success is going to continue because he does have that attitude of, what do I need to do differently to be more successful at what I'm doing? So I think, you know, he shows some signs of what I think is a very mature attitude. Anything else you want to add, Sal? Did I lose him? Oh, the call dropped. So hopefully Sal will be calling back into the show here. But, yeah, I just, okay, here he comes. I'm going to bring him back into the queue. Okay, Sal, I lost you, and I didn't realize it.
Yeah, it's funny. It just went, all of a sudden I couldn't hear nothing.
So any other thoughts on the Jesse Love interview?
Yeah, other than that, you know, that was basically, you know, what just what I grabbed off it, you know what, and, you know, I mean, you know, he's always been a student. You know, the school of racing, you know, since I, you know, first met him, you know, years ago. And, you know, he's just going to continue to improve. And I guess, like with any other driver, you know, you just got to see what the future holds for him.
Yep. I do think he shows a maturity, though, that we haven't always seen in up-and-coming race car drivers. And I think that's going to bode very well for him if he can maintain that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it will. I mean, you know, I'm sure he's got a good head on his shoulders, you know what, and he, and you know, with the Venturini crew, you know, behind him, you know, helping him, you know, then plus, you know, with his marketing team, you know, I'm sure they're doing a lot, you know, they're doing a lot for him too.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the truck series. They also raced out at Pocono Raceway on Saturday. There was a big race day on Saturday. We got a triple header with the ARCA Menard Series, the Truck Series, and the Xfinity Series. Kyle Busch, at the age of 38, driving the number 51 Xeris Transport Chevrolet for Kyle Busch Motorsports and crew chief Brian Patty, won his 64th victory in 170 Craftsman Truck Series races. It was his second victory and fifth top 10 finish this year, and his third victory and fifth top 10 finish in six races at Pocono. Corey Heim posted his second top 10 finish in two races at Pocono and his 12th in finish of the season. Taylor Gray finished third, posting his top 10, his first top 10 finish in one race at Pocono, and he was also the highest finishing rookie of the race. It was race win number 100 for Kyle Busch Motorsports, the CRC Brackling 150 at Pocono Raceway. And it was both a thrilling and historic afternoon out at Pocono Raceway. A lot of people have been asking when Kyle Busch was going to get that 100th victory, and it was a very hard-earned win for Kyle Busch with that last lap pass for his Kyle Busch Motorsports team's milestone 100th series victory in the Craftsman Truck Series. Kyle Busch won that race with that last lap pass over Corey Heim in the number 11th. It was his second win of the season and 64th win of his Truck Series career. And the 100th win, can we say that one more time, for Kyle Busch Motorsports team. Heim led 27 of the 60 laps and finished second. Taylor Gray scored a career-best finish in third. Then it was Christopher Bell, Grant Infinger, Ty Majeski, Christian Eckes, Dean Thompson, Ben Rhodes, Matt DiBenedetto rounds up the top 10. The pole sitter, Nick Sanchez, had led 7 laps, but he was involved in an accident on lap 47. The defending series champion, Zane Smith, won the first and second stages after leading 19 laps, but he was involved in a 10-truck crash on lap 53. The red flag was displayed for cleanup before the final restart of the race fell on lap 56. There were 5 lead changes among 4 drivers and 5 cautions for 20 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 108.434 miles per hour. Your thoughts there about the top 10 finishers in the CRC Brackling 150?
Yeah, it was, I was able to watch some of the race. I was coming back to Santa Barbara and watching it on the iPad. So, yeah, I caught the last 20 or 30 laps. But, man, I'll tell you, that move that Kyle Busch put on Corey Heim to get the win, it was. I mean, he felt kind of bad. You know, he said it, you know, to the post-race, you know, I felt bad for Corey. He goes, but you know what? He said, you know, it's part of racing. And, you know, he's seen the opportunity, you know, and he seized it. You know, I mean, he did it to where, you know, he didn't have to wreck anybody or put him into the wall or anything, you know, like we've seen in the cup race, you know.
Right.
That just showed Kyle's, you know, the talent level, you know, that Kyle has, especially in the trucks, you know, they race so, you know, they're always so free and, you know, and uncontrollable, you know what. But, I mean, it was a congratulations for Kyle on the win, you know what, and kind of felt bad for Corey, you know, finishing second behind, you know, Taylor Gray, you know, getting that third place finish, you know, the top finishing rookie, you know. Then of course, you know, then you go back down the, you know, you go all the way back down, you know, to the rest of the drivers. But you know, it was the last. I think this is the last race to get into the chase. So I know Matt Crafton. That last caution came out, and he was below the cut line. And next, you know, he ended up above the cut line, and there was just drivers going up and down between him and Nick Sanchez. And, you know, that they,
yeah,
when they interviewed Matt after the race, you know, it's kind of neat, you know, to hear some of the comments about it. But, you know, it's, you know, like I said, congrats to Kyle on getting the win. I kind of wish, with this race being the last race to get into the chase, they shouldn't have allowed any drivers from the other series to be part of this. I think this should have been one race. It should have been set aside just for the truck drivers, just for the craft truck drivers only, and let them decide who's going to make the chase. And then after that, then, you know, then let them, you know, continue to compete. But, you know, NASCAR doesn't have that ruling in, and
right.
You know, but I think, in my opinion, I think that this should have just been a Craftsman Truck Series only race, you know, to let them, you know, decide who's going to get in, you know, because Kyle did take one spot, and who knows how the rest of the race could have played out without Kyle and who else is there? Parker Klingerman was another one that was in there as a.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Parsons and also Ross Chastain and Austin Hill, I think they should have not had them drivers in there and just let it just be, you know, just the truck drivers, you know, let them fight it out. And then once they get into the chase, then, you know, open it back up again.
Yeah, actually, they can't race during the chase, I don't think. They have to race during
regular season. Oh, no, I know they can't. But, I mean, Kyle had other races he could have went for his 100th win at. You know what, and for whatever reason, he chose this race. But,
he could win it. But let me go ahead and do the breakdown here. We had, actually, there were 29 cars that finished all 60 laps of the race. The rest of the cars had incidents that took them out early. So starting with Tanner Gray. He was out on lap 3 because of an accident. Jake Garcia out on lap 45. Again, an accident. All of these are due to accidents. Zane Smith out on lap 51, along with three or four other drivers, including Kaz Grala, Stuart Friesen, Austin Hill, and Zane Smith, all out on lap 51 because of a big accident. Ross Chastain was out on lap 52, and everybody else finished on the lead lap. So the margin of victory was 0.604 seconds. So it was a pretty hotly contested race.
Yeah, it was. You know, I felt bad for Jake Garcia, you know, because he was in a must-win. He was also in a must-win situation, you know, to get into the chase, you know, and it would have been nice to see Bill McAnally, you know, have two drivers in there, but you know, either way, you know what, it is what it is, you know, and he got a lot of experience. He still has, you know, more racing left, you know, to get more experience for next season. So I'm sure he's going to come back next year back to BMR Racing. So,
before, it sounds like Bill McAnally is putting everything he can behind trying to get Jake into the playoffs.
Oh yeah, and he's putting everything into the series itself too. You know, I'm sure we might hear an announcement by the end of the season, before the end of the season, maybe the end of the season, or maybe we won't hear it all. You know, that he's not going to be back in the West. You know, he's going to just stay focused on the
truck series.
He's going to stay focused on the truck series. Yeah, for
right,
some of the conversations I've had with him.
Yeah, that's great. Let's go ahead and cover the points report.
Okay, the points are Corey Heim is in first, Zane Smith in second, Grant Enfinger third, Ben Rhodes in fourth, Ty Majeski in fifth, Christian Eckes. And a finishing sixth, Carson Hocevar in seventh, Matt D. Benedetto in eighth, the rookie Nick Sanchez ninth, and Matt Crafton rounded out the top ten. And I know Zane Smith and Corey Heim were really fighting. I know Zane Smith really wanted that you know, to be, you know, the regular season champion, and I think he ended up in a wreck too, you know, towards the end of the race, you know, and but, I mean, still, you know, gosh, Corey Heim had 5 stage wins. Zane had 4. They're going in with 15 and 14 playoff points. Christian Eckes has 4 stage wins and 14 playoff points. So they're going to be tough. Carson Hocevar, 2 stage wins and 12 playoff points. So it's going to be interesting once their playoffs start and see how it breaks down and see how see the last 4 standing for the championship is this year.
Yeah, it's interesting that those five drivers, the ones you mentioned, Heim, Zane Smith, Grant Enfinger, Christian Eckes, and Carson Hocevar, all have 2 wins this season as well. They're the only multiple winners, and that's quite a few, really, multiple winners here in the Truck Series. And then Ben Rhodes, of course, has 1 win. But the other drivers that are in on points, there's what, 4 drivers that are in on points.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, 4 drivers in on points. So, I mean, anything can happen, and I'm sure anything will happen, and you know, I'm sure they're going to make it. You know, each team is going to make it tough. You know, for their competitors. You know, to see how the, you know, to see how it, to see how it goes. Because, like I said, when they do the reset, you know, Corey Heim, Zane Smith, Grant Enfinger are going to be they're going to have almost Corey Hyman and Zane Smith are almost going to be guaranteed to go into the next round with all the points
yeah.
they have. Yes, compared to Matt Crafton and Nick Sanchez and Ty Majeski.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that this weekend at Richmond Raceway, that is the season finale for the Craftsman Truck Series. So that we will know who the 10 drivers will be that will go on into the playoff round of 10. And that first race actually takes place on August the 11th at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. So hard to believe that their season's already ending. So.
Yeah, it is.
So just one more race left to decide who's going to be those final 10. So if you think those races have been intense up to this point, I would expect that race at Richmond Raceway to be very, very intense.
It is going to be intense.
Okay, we're going to go back now. Let's go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series race. I watched part of that race, but I didn't get to watch. Whoops, I hit the wrong link there. I didn't get to see the entirety of that race. Okay, let's go ahead to the Xfinity Series. Austin Hill was your race winner for the Explore the Pocono Mountains 225 at the age of 29, driving the number 21 Global Industrial Chevrolet for Richard Childress Racing with crew chief Andy Street. It was a sixth victory in 67 Xfinity Series races and his fourth victory in 15th top 10 finish so far this season. Also his first victory and second top 10 finish in three races at Pocono Raceway. Sam Mayer, he finished second, posting his second top 10 finish in three races at Pocono Raceway. And it is his 11th top 10 finish of this season. Chase Elliott finished third, posting his second top 10 finish in two races at Pocono. And Sammy Smith, finishing sixth, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. I need to go to the Xfinity Series recap page now. Austin Hill captured that win in overtime. He survived an early race pit road speeding penalty. He gambled on fuel strategy and prevailed in an incredible wheel-to-wheel run to the checkered flag in overtime to claim that fourth NASCAR Xfinity Series victory of this season in the Explore the Pocono Mountains 225 at Pocono. He didn't lead the race at Pocono until overtime, but he led when it really counted. Hill pushed the number 8 of Josh Berry down the front stretch in overtime, and Berry missed the corner. Hill prevailed and was leading when the caution flew on the final lap to get that fourth victory of the season. Sam Mayer tied his best career finish in second. He made contact with Berry, cutting down his right front tire on that final lap. And in the first start of the season, Chase Elliott in the number 17 finished third. Riley Herbst stretched his fuel mileage to finish fourth, while Daniel Hemric picked up his third consecutive top five finish as they round out the top five. Then it was Sammy Smith, Brandon Jones, Brett Moffitt, Parker Kligerman, and Daniel Suarez to round out the top 10. Berry won the opening two stages, moving his total to 3 for the season. There were 11 lead changes among 8 drivers and 6 cautions for 21 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race, 122.922 miles per hour. So your thoughts, Sal, about this top 10 in the Xfinity Series race? Sounds like an exciting finish. I'm sad I missed it.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I missed the whole race once again because of the times that they changed. I had to drive off to Santa Barbara in the morning. By the time I drove back, this race is already over too. So I didn't get to see none of it. And then I couldn't find the app to record it, you know, so I could watch at least when I get home, or at least watch the last 10, 20 laps of it. So I basically missed the whole thing, but it sounded like it was a good finish between Austin Hill and who's the other driver? Josh Berry.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Who was the other driver?
Josh Berry. Austin Hill and Josh Berry were the two that got into it at the end of the race. Austin Hill came out on top.
Oh, was Josh Berry and who were the two drivers? I forget who the other driver was. It was, but they both ended up finishing back in the field as a because of it.
I thought you said it was Josh Berry and Austin Hill.
I think it was John Hunter Nemechek, if I remember correctly. I think they both kind of got into it, but I could be wrong. I think they ended up hurting each other going after that victory.
Oh,
but
it said Sam Mayer.
Oh, Sam Mayer?
Yeah, made contact. Yeah, Sam Mayer made contact with Josh Berry, cutting down his right front tire on the final lap.
Okay.
But Sam Mayer.
So, yeah, those
Sam
two
Mayer
got into each other, and that opened the door for Austin Hill to get that victory.
Yeah, Sam Mayer ended up finishing second in the race. So Josh Berry got the bad end of the stick, but I'm sure you want to win the race, you don't want to go out like that, but I'm sure in the back of his mind he's thinking, hey, at least next year I have a cup ride, so you know, I'll just take whatever I can get. You know what? He's in the chase, so you know, you can't win them all, you know, and I'm not gonna go and fight somebody, you know, for the, you know, but, you know, congrats to Sammy Smith as being the highest rookie of the race at sixth.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Suarez, of course, coming from the Cup Series to finish 10th. You know, I got to go back and see if these guys, if I know a couple drivers that's helped, but, you know, you see drivers like Daniel Suarez, Ty Dillon, he's some of these drivers, you know, Corey Heim, you know, who raced here, you know, of course, Chase Elliott, you know, if it really does help him for the next day, you know. I mean, I know Kyle Busch has gone back-to-back, but he's a whole different animal because Kyle Busch doesn't use the Xfinity race to learn the track. Kyle Busch races the Xfinity because he knows he can win. As to where Daniel Suarez and these other drivers, you know, they use the, you know, Chase Elliott, you know, they use that, especially with Chase's short season because of injury. You know what? He needs to get all the seat time and get that mojo back. But, you know, you look at all the other drivers, you know, who do this, you know, to learn, you know, how much do they really improve, you know, coming out the next day and using that to, you know, to see if it's going to help them.
Yeah, I've heard both sides of it.
And
it seems like some drivers feel like the seat time always helps, even though the cars are so different, they still find that the seat time helps. It helps them to get to know the track better so that when they get in their cup car, they kind of know where the, you know, how the track runs, how the corners are, and the handling of the car in those corners, because that's why they call it the tricky triangle, because every corner is different. And so I think they find the seat time helps them at a track, especially like Pocono, that is so different than all the other tracks that they race. But as far as what transfers from an Xfinity Series car to a Cup Series car, very little, because they're two entirely in different cars from what it has been in the past. Same thing with the Truck Series, very different.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I mean, especially the trucks that are spinning the cars, they're just day to night, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean,
they get to know the track more than anything else. Okay, there were 35 cars running at the end of this race. And several of those cars ended up a lap or more down. Only 23 cars finished all 92 laps. There were a few drivers that did have issues. Sage Karam actually was out on lap 7 because of transmission issues. Corey Heim had a suspension issue that took him out on lap 81. Let's see. Lap 85, Connor Mosack was involved in an accident that took him out of the race. Everybody else actually finished on, like I say, a lap or more down, with 23 of those drivers finishing all 92 laps. The race did end under caution because of that incident that Sal was talking about between Sam Mayer and Josh Berry. So Josh Berry was pretty dominant in that race. It was his race to lose, and unfortunately that contact between him and Sam Mayer is what did it. So it was kind of sad to see that happen.
Yeah, it always is, you know, but I mean, that's just part of racing. I mean, you know, they got expected, you
sure.
know, I mean, everybody's there. It's getting towards the end of the season. You know, everybody's racing, you know, for the win, you know, they're trying to get all the points they possibly can. You know what they, you know, they want to set themselves up for the chase, you know what, and you know, that's just, it's just the nature of the beast, you know, especially with so much on the line towards this end of the season.
Yep. Well, these guys still have 7 races left to run in their regular season. They'll end their regular season at Kansas Speedway on September the 9th, and then they'll start their playoff round of 12. But 7 races, it's winding down. Let's go ahead and get into the points report. So.
All right. Let me see. The points are John Hunter Nemechek still leading the points. Austin Hill is in second. Justin Allgaier in third. Cole Custer fourth. Chandler Smith in fifth. And sixth is Josh Berry. Then from there, then we go to Daniel Hemric, seventh. Sammy Smith, eighth. Sam Mayer, ninth. Sheldon Creed, 10th. Riley Herbst, 11th. And Parker Klingerman is actually... Riley Herbst is the one on the bubble because Jeb Burton will take over somebody's spot at the top and push Parker Klingerman out since he has a win. So
that's correct.
So basically, yeah, Riley Herbst is the one on the bubble with Sheldon Creed right behind him at 493 points. Sheldon Creed at 516. Then from there, then it'll go to, let me see, Jeb Burton will move up. Klingerman is out. So Klingerman will be 20, actually, she'll be 34 points. 34 points out of the 12th spot.
Yeah. Okay, there's 3 drivers that have multiple wins. John Hunter Nemechek and Austin Hill both have the most. They have the 4 wins, but John Hunter has that 1 additional stage win over Austin Hill, giving him the most playoff points. Then you've got 4 other drivers with 1 victory, Justin Allgaier, Chandler Smith, Sammy Smith, and Jeb Burton. That means there's 5 spots still open for drivers to get in on points, or a driver below that cut line could get a win in these next 7 races and put themselves in above that cut line. Any thoughts along those lines, Sal?
Yeah, I don't really see anybody below the cut line. I see drivers that are within the cut line, you know, possibly getting a win, but I don't really see any drivers below the cut line, you know, that can possibly get a win. The only one would be that I thought he would already have one by now. Actually, 2 drivers would have been Sheldon Creed and Rodney Herbst. I figure would have already had a win by now.
Okay. So we'll see in these next 7 races. Let me go over the schedule here for those 7 races. They race at Michigan this weekend. Then it's Indianapolis's Motor Speedway Road Course, Watkins Glen International, and then Daytona International Speedway. Those are all August races, that's five, and then two races into September to include Darlington Raceway and the season finale at Kansas Speedway on September the 9th. So seven races left, five in August and two in September.
Yeah, it's getting, they're winding down too, getting ready to, winding down to the,
down to the wire.
To the, down to the wire, yeah.
Yep. So, okay, I know we're just a little bit ahead of schedule, but let's go ahead and get into the Cup Series and the win there. That, for a while, I thought Martin Truex Jr. might get that victory, but it was not to be. The race winner of the HighPoint.com 400 was Denny Hamlin, age 42, and I'll say that it was a controversial win, just like his win at the Coke 600. He drives the number 11 Mavis Tires and Brakes Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. His crew chief is Christopher Gabehart. It was his 50th victory in 635 Cup Series races, his second victory in ninth top 10 finish this season, and his seventh victory and 22nd top 10 finish in 34 races at Pocono. Tyler Reddick finished in second, posting his third top 10 finish in six races at Pocono and his ninth top 10 finish this season. Martin Truex Jr. posted his 15th top 10 finish in 34 races at Pocono. And Ty Gibbs, who finished fifth, was the highest finishing rookie. He really did a good job. It was good to see that. Actually, I'm on the wrong page here, so give me a second. High Point. Okay, Denny Hamlin wins the High Point 400 at Pocono. He prevailed in a tight door-to-door and door bump to go on and pass Kyle Larson with seven laps remaining to claim a historic and all-time best seventh NASCAR Cup Series victory at Pocono Raceway. The win in Sunday's High Point 400, also marking Hamlin's 50th career trophy and second of the season. Hamlin, the win is his second of the year, seventh at Pocono, and 50th of his career. Tyler Reddick finished second, followed by Martin Truex, Kevin Harvick, Ty Gibbs, Christopher Bell, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Harrison Burton, Eric Jones, and Chase Elliott. Hamlin took the lead from Kyle Larson with six laps left. The race ended under caution after the 41 of Ryan Preece spun on the final lap and could not get the car restarted. The pole winner, William Byron, led 60 laps but got off cycle late in the race and ended up finishing in 14th. Stage 1 was run by Joey Logano, Stage 2 by Kyle Larson. There were 14 lead changes among 9 drivers and 11 cautions for 42 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 119.363 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the race results in the top 10?
Yeah, I, you know, of course, you know, the win's always going to come under controversy, you know, for the move that, not only for the move that Danny put on Kyle Larson, but also for the fact that NASCAR didn't throw that caution when they should have. The caution should have come out right away, and they should have had a chance at going to another green white checkered instead of waiting so long to throw the caution. But you know, it's funny that Danny says I never touched him, but yet all the replays shows he touched him. He had to know he touched him because those cars are just so sensitive. Yeah, he goes I never hit him. But those cars are so sensitive, you know, I mean, you're going to feel anything, you know, and like Kyle Larson said in his interview, you know what, hey, you know, all his friends know that he's never wrong, you know, he's always right, you know, so he just left it at that. But, you know, congrats to Ty Gibbs, you know, being the highest finishing rookie, you know, getting a fifth place finish at a track, you know, that is really, you know, a track, you know, is really a tough track to, you know, to race on, especially for a rookie, Cup driver.
The other thing that's interesting about the Denny Hamlin win is it's exactly the same move he used on Chastain at the Coke 600. So if you watch both of those replays, it's exactly the same move. I wonder if he can win without them.
No, that's the one he used last year on Chastain at the same track. That's the same move he used at Pocono last year.
Okay. Well, I think he also used the move at the Coke 600.
Yeah, but they're talking about last year when he won at Pocono that he used the same move on Chastain too. But either way, like I said, congrats to Ty, for getting that fifth place finish, as a rookie driver. You go down, like you said, the top 10, Chase Elliott getting that 10th place finish. He's in a, I know he's getting closer in points, but I think without that top three finish, I think now Chase is in a must-win situation, too, to also make it into the playoffs. We'll see what happens with that. I thought Martin Truex Jr. for sure was going to win this race. He was
too.
Just the clap in the field, and then to come up and finish in the third spot. Tyler Reddick sure did come on strong at the end of the race too. Boy, that guy was
he was
on fire. I mean, he had a couple good pit stops and made some good calls and was able to put Tyler up there to he never got a chance to battle Danny for the.
That brings up another driver. It was Austin Dillon who had a run-in with Tyler Reddick earlier in the race. And Austin Dillon is another driver. If you look at the replay, Tyler Reddick held his line. And the only car that made a move from one lane to another was Austin Dillon. But he says Tyler hit him. So he needs to go back and look at the replay on those.
He's hanging around Kyle Busch too much.
It makes you wonder.
Seriously,
well, we'll see.
I mean, every driver. I mean, I'm not going to mention all the other drivers who have driven for Kyle Busch that have that Kyle Busch attitude that never had it before. I'm just going to leave it at that. But he does because, and then he goes and throws his helmet and misses, doesn't even hit the car. Of course, the helmet comes rolling back down the track, and I think that's where the issue came with NASCAR was that, Not only do you throw the helmet, but I mean, then it rolls down the track and it now becomes a hazard, a safety hazard. They really need to do something. They really need to do something about that. I think NASCAR needs to step in and do something about. I know Tony Stewart used to throw helmets, but at least he would hit the car. But I mean, Austin Dillon. I mean, it was so bad. You got a final for that. I mean, he sent him to a class on helmet throwing.
Well, they're not supposed to get out on the track like that anymore anyway. So, yeah, that definitely is something for NASCAR to take a look at. Let me go ahead and do the rundown here. There were actually 32 cars running at the end of the race. Some of those were multiple laps down, but actually 30 of the cars finished all 160 laps of the race. Only a couple of incidents here, four to be exact. Daniel Suarez was out on lap 37 because of the accident. Joey Logano was involved in some dust up there. He was out on lap 48 because of the DVP policy, the damaged vehicle policy. And Austin Dillon out on lap 105 because of an accident. That's when he was throwing his helmet. And Jesse and Haley was out on lap 53 because of an 153 because of an accident. So everybody else finished that race, even though they might have been multiple laps down. 30 of the cars did finish all 160 laps. This was another race that ended under caution.
Yeah, like I said, the caution should have been thrown before the white. before the white came out, you know, and you know, and they should have finished.
Reese was going to be able to save the car and get going again. The problem is that he didn't. So,
yeah, I mean the race should have finished under green and given Tyler Reddick and Martin a check, you know, to run down Denny, you know, and like I said, Larson showed his displeasure after the race. You know, he pulled up next to Danny and just gave him a small tap. You know, probably flipped him off.
Well,
you know, gave him a finger.
You fans.
And they kept going.
Displeasure as well.
Well, then he said it, but I mean, he used the car like a weapon and go after him and, you know, crash him after the race. You know, he pulled up next to him, probably just flipped him the bird and, you know, that he, you know, he just said, you know, that.
Well, a lot of fans weren't happy either, Sal. They were booing him.
Oh, I know. Everybody booed him. Oh, yeah, they were.
Yep, they were giving him the booze. And he said he loved it, but I don't know. I don't know when Denny Hamlin's going to get it. I don't think he ever will. But anyway.
Now you know where... Now you know why him and Bubba are such good friends.
I don't know.
The same way. Bubba Wallace is the same way. You know, he has the same attitude like Danny. You know, he doesn't care, you know, about the booze and all that. You know, he doesn't. And that's probably why Danny won't never let him go, because he figures we're alike.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Yeah, it's kind of sad to see that from a driver like Denny Hamlin. He should be in a different place from my point of view, and he's just not. I think, his emotional IQ is just a little bit lower than some of the other drivers that are at his age.
Emotionally, he is in a different place.
He is.
He's in his own place. He's in his own little world.
He is. He is. I think he wants to be more important than what a lot of other people see him as. But let's go ahead and cover the points report.
The points are Martin Truex needed the points, William Byron in second, Danny Hamlin in third, Christopher Bell in fourth, Ross Chastain in fifth, Kyle Busch in sixth, Kyle Larson in seventh, and Kevin Harvick round out the top eight. And then from there, then you go down to Ryan Blaney in ninth, Joey Logano in 10th, Tyler Reddick in 11th, Brad Keselowski in 12th, Chris Buescher in 13th, Ricky Stenhouse in 14th, Bubba Wallace in 15th, and rounding out the top 16 is Michael McDowell. So with
Chase
that
Elliott
said,
in 21st, I don't know if he's going to make it this year.
He's got a long way. He's in a must-win situation, almost.
Yeah,
he's got to pick up a lot of points.
Well, I want to check and see how many races are left here for the Cup Series before the playoffs begin. In August, they have the five races, basically the same five races that Xfinity has: Michigan, Indianapolis, Watkins Glen, and Daytona. That's actually four races. They've got Richmond this week. So that's five races. Five races left before they start their round of 16 on September 3rd at Donaldson Raceway. So they have fewer races than the Xfinity Series, Sal.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting, you know, when they do get there. Like I said, Michael McDowell's on the bubble. Bubba Wallace is right there. You know, A.J. Allmendinger still has, you know, could still have a couple good finishes, you know, and get inside that chase bubble.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Six drivers have one win, including Christopher Bell, Ross Chastain, Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, Tyler Reddick, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. five drivers have two or more wins, with Denny Hamlin and Kyle Larson being the two drivers with two wins. Martin Truex and Kyle Busch both have three wins, and William Byron with the four wins. So what's that? Six plus five, that's 11 spots taken on wins. That leaves only five spots left for drivers to get in on points or to pick up a win.
Yep, it's getting close.
It's getting very close, especially with those just five races left. It's going to get a little intense. Okay. Any other things you want to say about the points report?
No, that's really basically about it.
All right. So we've got our preview in. You said you were not at the racetrack this weekend. When are your next plans to be at the racetrack, Sal?
Probably 2 weeks, I think 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. And where are you going to be?
Probably here at Irwindale.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
The SRL isn't until, I think the SRL is 3 weeks away or something like that. Beginning of the month, somewhere in there at Colorado, but I don't think I'm going to make it out to Colorado.
Okay. Are you going to make it to Phoenix?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it. It's still on my list. So I don't know. I just got to see what dates it is, because I got other things coming up too. So I got to see if I can squeeze it in, or if it's worth it to squeeze it in, or if it's worth it just to forget about it and do another race, you know, go somewhere else for that weekend. So I don't know. Still a lot of things up in the air.
Well, don't forget about Las Vegas.
I know,
we'll
it don't look like I'm gonna make Vegas. I know. I think Vegas is when?
In October. Let me look up. I just had this
I think that's the weekend of the All-American 400 in Nashville.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's the end of the month, huh?
Let me look in just to double check. Las Vegas. Las Vegas comes up October 15th, basically around the same date as last year.
Okay. Maybe I won't make
right
it. I don't know.
Yeah, right below the South Point 400 in Las Vegas.
Yeah, the thing is, it's in the, you know what? I think I have something that weekend already. I think I already had something. I'm not sure. I got to check.
Okay. Well, keep me posted.
Yeah.
And, we're getting ready for our Hot Topic Sound Off segment, so we'll look forward to talking to you next Monday night here at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time for our review of the races that will be taking place out at Richmond. And then Jay and I will be on the preview show this Thursday as a podcast.
All right. Well, you guys all have a good – everybody have a good, safe weekend. Have a good show after, and I'm going to hang up a little bit early here and go have me some dinner.
Okay. Enjoy your dinner. Say hi to Sandy for us.
All right. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Good
okay,
night.
Goodbye.
All right, it is the top of the hour. That means it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off segment. Joining us so far is Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. And what a weekend. I would heard a lot of people talking about. They thought maybe this is Bristol or Martinsville after a short track with the amount of things we got to talk to about tonight.
Indeed. We also have Mike Orzel on board. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hello. Good evening, everybody. Yeah, it looks like the race this weekend, there might have actually been more beef than between me and Jay.
Okay. Well, we'll hear about that as we continue to talk hot topics here tonight. But also joining us is Tommy Kraft. Welcome back to the show, Tommy.
Hey, how are y'all? Thanks for having me back. It's been a while. Glad to be back home.
All right. Jay, you want to start us off with the first hot topic tonight?
Well, I guess we'll start with the one at the top of the field, Denny Hamlin and Kyle Larson for the win.
All right. Mike, I know you've got some thoughts about that.
Well, this is pretty polarizing, right? So it seems like the reaction on social media really had to do with whose driver you're a fan of, because obviously the Kyle Larson fan says it was the dirtiest move that's ever been raced, and Denny Hamlin's fans all say, oh, it's just hard racing. That's what it is. So as far as objectively what it is, it's tough to say. Denny pulled almost the exact same move on Ross Chastain last year. I think Kyle Larson pointed it out in his interview yesterday. Almost the exact same move, pinched him into the fence coming out of turn one at Pocono in that exact same race. But the difference is Ross kind of had it coming. Ross and Denny had been going at it all year long for up to that point, and then kind of dragged on afterwards. And Ross kind of had it coming. We've seen that move used before. In fact, Chase Elliott used it on Denny Hamlin at Phoenix a few years back as well. The old, you're either going to lift or you're going to hit the fence, it's your decision kind of a move. And it seems like the universal consensus is, yeah, it's legit, but it's kind of on the dirty side. And I think even Denny's teammate, Martin Truex, said that, yes, it's pretty dirty to do something like that to somebody, especially when the guy doesn't have it coming. When Elliott did it to Hamlin, it was in retaliation for what Hamlin had done to Elliott a couple weeks prior at Martinsville. When Hamlin did it to Chastain, it was in retaliation for what Chastain did to Hamlin over the course of several races, probably most recently at that point, Gateway. I don't know what Kyle Larson has ever done to Denny Hamlin to deserve getting fenced like that. Was a race win really worth doing something like that to somebody? I don't know. But I think Denny Hamlin, if nothing else, he's in sole possession now of the most unpopular driver crown. He got booed to death yesterday, and I kind of enjoyed seeing it.
Okay, tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, I also kind of thought it was dicey what Larson did after the retaliation, or after Hamlin put him in the wall, not the retaliation, during that caution lap. Kyle Larson drove up from however far back he fell after Denny did that to him to like fourth or fifth. He drove up on the caution lap and right around like where the flag stand is he kind of like let Denny know that he was unhappy with him and kind of drove Denny close up to the wall. I mean, it even looked like their tires made contact, which had me thinking that maybe a tire can, you know, possibly go down, but I think that was a few years back when they had that issue, and these cars aren't like that. But either way, it was pretty dicey. And, you know, had he had hit Denny harder, you know, probably would have been a problem. But, yeah, I mean, Mike made some good points there with Larson didn't really deserve it because, I mean, Denny and Ross were going at it all year last year. And it was basically the exact same move Denny did last year on Ross that he did on Kyle Larson this year, and the boos were amazing. I agree with that. I mean, nobody wanted to see him win that way, but I mean, at the same time, he said they didn't touch, but if you watch the Harvick on camera video, they do touch a little bit, and I don't know. I mean, you kind of prefer to see a straight-up clean pass, but also at the same time, it is kind of hard racing. And for one, I didn't want either one of them to win. I wanted either Martin Truex or Ty Gibbs or William Byron to make a miracle and come back from 20th and win. But there was a lot of drama in yesterday's race. And there's another topic I want to discuss that I put in there from some more drama yesterday, but
yeah, we'll pick that up.
Was a great race, sold out, and Denny Hamlin, he's turning into Joey Logano for me. I'm struggling with what I want to say here because he preaches all the time how he wants to be raised clean and all this stuff, and then he goes out and does crap like this. And then, to me, he's just one of those that can dish it out but can't take it. So all I got to say is when Larson returns the favor, whenever that time is, he better not go on his podcast and start throwing out words like dirty and, oh, he should be suspended and, oh, he should be black flagged, oh, they should, you know, whatever. Don't want to hear it because he's now done this 3 or 4 times where he's been like, oh, that's a dirty move, but yet he'll do it and say, oh, hard racing. It's becoming hypocritical at this point.
Yeah, well, that's very true. Denny Hamlin is hypocritical. I remember him complaining about Chase Elliott with the move on him and how he was mocking him a little bit and everything. He talks out of two sides of his mouth. It's only dirty if somebody else does it. But I think Kyle Larson said it best. People who know Denny Hamlin know that from his perspective, he's always right. Nobody else knows what they're talking about. He's the only one that's right. So we're not going to convince Denny Hamlin that what we saw was something entirely different than what he says he did. It's a dirty move. There's no question about that. It's not the clean way to win a race. If you want to watch the clean way to win a race, watch the win by Kyle Busch in the Truck Series race. That was a clean way to win a race. What Denny Hamlin did was the exact opposite. So I am not a fan of Denny Hamlin. I've made no qualms about saying that because I just think I don't think he has the emotional maturity to be what he thinks he is. And I think that emotional immaturity is part of the reason why he still hasn't won a championship. I'd be surprised if Denny Hamlin ever wins a championship. And if he does it, and he does it dirty, I hope NASCAR calls him on it and gives him a penalty. Whether or not they will is an entirely different story. But I don't see Denny Hamlin having the emotional maturity to be a champion. He just doesn't have it. And this is just another example of it. And, Mike, you bring up good points about what the differences are. And Kyle Larson said the same thing. He said, I've never had to approach Denny Hamlin and apologize to him for any moves that I made in racing. Denny Hamlin has come to him and apologized. Sorry, I had to do that or whatever. But Kyle Larson said he's never had to make an apology to Denny Hamlin. So I think that says a lot. The fact that Denny Hamlin knows he did something wrong, and he knows he did, and that's why he apologized. So I'm not a fan of Denny Hamlin. I think a lot of the fans agree that the move was a dirty move and they weren't happy with it. And it was uncalled for. It's not the sign of a champion, and it's not the way to win a race. It's mean and spiteful. Jay?
Wow. Well, I'm going to disagree here, and it's going to start with Sharon, but not 100%. In my opinion, I would not call it a dirty move. However, as has been said, it is not the cleanest and purest talent move that we saw, and that definitely goes to Kyle Busch in that truck race on the final lap making the move he did. That was impressive. So, like I said, it is by no means is it the cleanest move. I would not call it a dirty move. It is hard racing, and you're protecting your position just like blocking when it comes to super speedways. The two points I would make have both been made. The first one was by Mike. I think it's a matter of, at this point, of who you're a fan of and who you're not. We've seen Kyle Larson make that move with Chase Elliott, I believe, back at Auto Club, as well as others. Again, it's not always necessarily the cleanest. Sometimes they say they didn't know that they were there. Kind of hard racing, and like I said, not exactly the cleanest that you can see. But I think some of it is it's a matter of whose side you're on. The other point that I would make is Tommy and Sharon both hit on Denny Hamlin is hypocritical, because if somebody had made that move on him, then it absolutely is the dirtiest move that's ever been done, even beyond Earnhardt. So that's where I have the problem. If you're going to race a certain way, and I know Tommy's going to can come back to me with this, Joey Logano is one of, he'll race you a certain way, but then he doesn't necessarily get upset all the time. I'm not saying he hasn't ever, but accepts it when he gets raced the same way. We've seen him or heard him say, hey, that's what I'd have done if I'd have been in that position when somebody's raced him a particular way. So, I'm a Sharon. I'm not a fan of necessarily Denny Hamlin's, especially being that hypocritical. Like I said, I can just hear it. If he'd have been the one on the receiving end of that, if he'd have called for a one race suspension or whatever from NASCAR, dirtiest move ever, I can hear it. I mean, so that's why I don't like the fact that he's saying, and the fact that he said he didn't even touch him. I mean, that was clearly there was touching involved. Yeah.
Okay, Mike.
I just want to clarify. When I say it was a dirty move, I don't mean it's a penalty move. I don't think NASCAR needs to get involved here. So just to be completely clear, you can have a move on the racetrack, and this would be one of them, where it's ill-advised, it's not clean racing, it's not sporting, however you want to describe it, but I don't think it reaches the threshold where the sanctioning body, in this case NASCAR, needs to get involved with it and issue a penalty. With regard to the contact, yeah, it was obvious. Kyle Larson hit the wall because Denny Hamlin doored him in the middle of turn one, and the five car was already sliding up the track because of the door-to-door contact there. It wasn't that Hamlin pinched him into the fence. It was that he body slammed him out of control, and that was he just continued the momentum out into the fence from there. As far as what they would do going forward, I don't know that Kyle Larson is the kind of guy who's going to carry a grudge and retaliate. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. We have seen him get out of character every once in a while and take his frustrations out on somebody. He references beef with Ryan Preece at the Bristol Dirt Race earlier this year. But by and large, Kyle Larson is the kind of guy who compartmentalizes very well. He doesn't let things like that get to him. I don't know that he's ever gone and headhunted for somebody at a later date, sometime other than a race where there was already some contact going on. So maybe that's going to happen. I don't know. With regard to the Larson versus Elliott thing, I think that was a spotter issue more than anything else. I think Larson didn't know Elliott was on his outside, which is how Elliott ended up getting pinched in the fence. So even then, I don't think it was Larson pulling that move on Elliott intentionally. It may have looked similar with the five car pinching the nine into the fence, but I don't think it was the same thing where it was an intentional move trying to force a guy out of position from there. So I think out of all the racers in the Cup Series, I wouldn't say Larson is the very cleanest, but he's not the kind of guy who's going to make a dirty move on somebody just to try and get him out of the way, especially with, 8-10 laps left in the race on a 2.5-mile racetrack. There was plenty of time left for Denny Hamlin to pass Kyle Larson cleanly. The 11 car was clearly faster, had been faster most of the rest of the day, but Hamlin decided to push the issue way early, make a move that most people seem to agree was at least on the side of dirty, probably not illegal, but dirty. And, we saw the results from it. And then he gets out of the car and acts like he's surprised while everyone's booing and says they can go boo his rock into the front of that racetrack. Get out of here, dude. There's a reason nobody likes you. And it's funny because Kyle Busch used to get booed just as bad. But even though I would boo Kyle Busch, I still respected him because at least he wore the black hat with pride. He knew people were booing him, and he kind of enjoyed it. Denny Hamlin seems to genuinely not understand why people boo him. And I would say it's even more obvious why they boo him versus why they ever booed Kyle Busch.
Okay, Tommy.
Well, Mike Addison literally added what I was just about to say about Kyle Larson. And, I was thinking Kyle Larson isn't completely innocent either. And I was going to bring up the Chase Elliott example and the Ryan Preece. And I think this year at the L.A. Coliseum, he slam somebody into the wall, Kyle Larson. I'm looking at Eric Almirola. I don't know if it's somebody like that. But, you know, I agree with Mike a little bit, too, that the Chase Elliott thing might have been a spotter issue, but it is an example of him running somebody close to the wall or off into the wall in the Chase Elliott incident. But also I want to say Kyle Larson handled that after race video pretty well. You know, some drivers are adrenaline pumping, cussing up a storm, wanting to throw a fist. He was calm and collected, just said he was pissed, which, I mean, that's not that bad. But I'm about like Mike, too. I don't see Kyle Larson holding a grudge, but I do see that if they're going to be, let's say the Championship Four involves Hamlin and Kyle Larson, I don't think Larson's going to have an issue of running Denny up the track into the wall if it comes to that. So, and then Hamlin better not get out of the car and start saying it's dirty and that he ruined his chance at a championship, because if you're going to race somebody like that during the regular season, I mean, expect it back. But the thing I don't like about Hamlin is, like, all I can think of is the Bowman incident, Martinsville, wrecking Chase Elliott in Martinsville. You know, now he did what he did to Kyle Larson. And like Mike just said, he's getting booed and he doesn't know why. Like, he's just hypocritical, and people are now, I mean, I think he's now the most hated driver, probably along with Bubba. But yeah, I mean, it's actually refreshing to not have Kyle Busch be the most hated driver, but Denny is now the villain, I guess. And like Mike said, I don't think the guy has a clue why Well, he just doesn't understand why he's hated. But, I mean, ever since last year, I think it's just getting worse and worse. He's just wrecking people and blaming everybody but himself. And, I mean, it's going to come back to get him. And to answer Jay's thing about Joey Logano, I still haven't recovered from him wrecking Byron at Darlington however long ago it was. And the sole reason is because Byron was driving that Jeff Gordon Flame paint scheme throwback from like the mid-2000s, was winning that race, the whole race, cleanly, and then Logano comes out of nowhere and just clobbers him for the win and then gets out of the car and says, oh, he ran me into the wall. And when Byron and Larson, in my opinion, are two of the cleanest racers out there. So, yeah, still haven't recovered from Joey, and I don't mind the fact that he sat there on the track for three or four laps with flat tires. In fact, I think every race should start out with Joey Logano with flat tires and being down, four laps down, to see if he can come back and win it.
That's good, Tommy. I just have no use for Denny Hamlin. I will be straight up about it. I think he's, as you guys have pointed out, hypocritical. I think he doesn't get it. Those are all things that describe Denny Hamlin. Thinks he's right when he's not, and thinks that he can say whatever he wants to say and people are going to believe it. I think people have finally figured out that Denny Hamlin's all out for Denny Hamlin, and it's all about him. And if he does it, it's okay. If somebody else does it, it's not okay. It's just the way Denny Hamlin operates. And I don't think it's very for being a Cup Series driver for as long as he's been a Cup Series driver, I think it's very immature. And I just don't think that Denny Hamlin's ever going to get it. So that's just the way I feel about him. I have no use for him whatsoever. Jay?
Yeah, and that's, you heard it from the stands. I know the label of most unpopular driver has really surfaced here since yesterday. I know I heard it on Sirius XM this morning already. I mean, he's built that reputation. You know, like I said, that's my biggest thing. When it comes to that is the hypocritical portion of it. You know, Ross Chastain, he said, hey, this is who I am. This is how I drive as far as the aggressiveness. didn't shy away from it, didn't try and say, hey, like me anyway. He said, you either do or you don't. I'm going to drive this way because that's how I've raced. When the two other things that just within the topic, but not about Denny Hamlin, I think we've pretty much hit on that of we have our opinions of him, and it generally is the same as the crowd there at Pocono Express. But Joey Logano, you know, back when it was, I go back to the Matt Kenseth deal. I'm a fan of Joey's. I've always liked him. But when Matt Kenseth put him in the wall, I cheered for Matt Kenseth because Joey had that coming. You know, I mean, that was – I understand NASCAR had to suspend Kenseth, and he took it, but Joey had that coming. And I think maybe that's where Joey learned a little bit. The Byron deal, I would have to agree with Tommy. That was kind of a shady deal as well. But we're talking about Kyle Larson. There's your champion, and I think it has to come – that comes from – weekly series racing when it comes to you have to maintain your car in order to run the next night. Yeah, he expressed his frustration. From that aspect, I think he's done as far as out to get Hamlin. That doesn't mean he's going to give him a lot of space when he's around him or whatever. What I found interesting is, and there's one here local, a local driver I talk about all the time, Shelby Sheedy. When he does an interview or talks and says, yeah, I'm pissed off, you know, I'm so mad, I'm pissed off, and this dude did me wrong, but they have a smile on their face. Not that they're laughing at the person. That's just they're that way. Like, you know, they say they're as pissed off as they've ever been, but they're smiling. And that, like I said, I think is a true racer. You know, they know, okay, hard racing, accidents happen. It happened. I expressed my displeasure with it. Move on tomorrow night or the next week or whatever is a new race, and we're going to move on. And I think we've seen that as a whole from Kyle Larson. So, yeah, I don't expect any headhunting from him. Like I said, is he going to be the easiest guy to pass or give Denny a break? Absolutely not.
Okay, Mike, what's our next hot topic?
Well, Tommy kind of teed this one up, so I really want to give him the opportunity to share more of his opinion on Joey Logano. But with regard to the Joey Logano incident, Logano had some choice words for the AMR safety crew. He was much more diplomatic in his TV interview, but there is a clip from the in-car camera where he is much less diplomatic with them. But the big question here that he brought up in his TV interview, and I think it's worth discussing, is should the AMR truck carry some spare tires on there to swap out to make the car a little bit safer to tow? We saw it with the 9 car during qualifying as well as the 22 car. The 9 had less damage, but the 22 got torn up pretty bad getting dragged the 2 miles, 2.5 miles all the way from turn one back to his pit stall. So should the AMR truck carry tires or some other way to tow a car that doesn't involve dragging it, if it has all 4 flat tires, dragging it across the track like that?
Okay, Tommy, you're up.
Well, to start off with, I'm not upset that he went 4 laps down because he had flat tires. That's the good part. And now I'm actually going to have to say I kind of side with him on this. I can't believe it. But, I mean, ever since this car came out, whenever these guys wreck, even, like, if it's just one flat tire out of all 4 tires, they have to get towed. They all go 2, 3, 4 laps down because of it, depending on what track they're at. And I think they should look into doing something a little bit different, too, because, I mean, it's kind of crazy, and it also, you know, brings more caution laps for them to run versus green flag laps. But I know there's going to be some problems and that they probably won't do anything about it. But I think Mike put in there that maybe they should put tires on it that aren't necessarily, like, full of air, just so that way he can get back to his pit stop and then have to get 4 fresh tires put on, versus getting towed around and going 4 laps down, 5 laps down, taking forever, damaging the car more, because most of these times when this car is getting dragged around the track like that, once they do get new tires on it, they got to pit again and then fix more damage because it messes up the, like, the aerodynamics of it and stuff. So, I mean, I think it, Joey brings up a valid point, and it's actually worthy of looking into. But can't say that I'm bummed that he went four laps down because of himself spinning at Pocono on the race on Sunday. I just – maybe one day I'll recover from what he did to William Byron at Darlington. But as of right now, I'm still salty.
Okay, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, first off, I don't know if we can applaud over the radio here, but let's give Tommy props for admitting that although he doesn't particularly like Joey, he does understand the situation and was willing to side with him. I commend you for that, Tommy. No, there is something, and this was addressed between the two radio shows today with the crosstalk leading into Dave Moody. And Moody said that that accident happened right in front of him. Looking at the car, he said he was surprised even the fact that Logano got out there for four laps before NASCAR put him in the garage for not making speed. He said the tires were bent so badly that it wasn't going to matter. In this particular case, that what happened during the towing the vehicle back to pit road wasn't going to change anything. They weren't going to be productive or probably should even come back out and run it all the rest during that race. However, we have seen some situations where maybe something can be done as far as improving the towing situation in returning them when they have flat tires or something like that. What I see as the drawback, and I think Mike will be able to respond to this as he's one that seems to have opinions about it, the time spent then. If you have the AMR team that changes four tires out there, keeping in mind this is not a professional pit crew, how are the fans going to react as far as time spent under caution then in getting that car back to pit road? One car who's obviously probably not going to be a winning car at that point, it's just the best finish they can get versus racing and letting the rest of the racers run out the race. So I think they should look into it. As far as what could be done, but also, like I said, of doing the whole change in four tires, whether they be full air or flat air, I think the time utilization there is not the best answer. And Sharon, keep an eye on the time here before we go to Mike.
Well, before it's my turn. Yeah, I wanted to do the announcement for our first-time listeners in case you're tuning in for the first time. We do go up there at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, but we do continue to record the rest of our conversation, and that's part of our bonus overtime material that's on our podcast. I will go out on Facebook and Twitter to let you know that the podcast is now available, and at that time or at your earliest convenience, just fast forward to that two-hour mark, and you can hear the rest of our conversation with topic. So, again, didn't want anybody to be caught off guard, and I wanted you to know how you can hear the rest of the conversation. So there it is. My thoughts exactly from Jay. Don't expect these AMS people to be able to change a tire in 13 seconds. It's not going to happen. It's going to take them a while to get that tire changed. Everything, and that means it's going to be a longer yellow flag. I like the idea. It sounds on the surface like a really good idea to have those tires, but I just think that it's going to take a while to get that tire changed, and then people are going to be complaining about the time that it's going to take to change that tire for this car to be on the track multiple laps down. So is it better that the car is off the track because of DPP, or do we want to bring the car back on the track limping around? It sounds good on the surface, but I think there could be just as many problems with the idea as it sounds good on one side of it. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Jay thought he was disagreeing with me because he made the assumption that I thought they should put spare tires on the AMR truck, and I don't. I don't think the AMR team should carry spare tires because of exactly what y'all said. They're slow enough as it is. you think that I would want to boo Denny Hamlin. If there's one group of people that I could boo on a consistent basis, it's the AMR track recovery group. I don't mean the medical people. The medical team that takes care of the driver immediately after the accident, they're top-notch. They're there quickly. They respond very promptly. They do what's necessary to make sure that the driver is safe and stays safe through getting out of the car. No problem with them. My beef is with the track recovery people who are responsible to get the track cleaned up and ready to go racing again. Oh, if I could boo them, I would boo them with the fire of 1,000 suns. So, no, I don't trust that they would change a tire in 13 seconds. They would take 13 minutes to change one tire, and then they'd move to the other side. No, the solution that I think that they should do is use the flatbed more often. Change the rules. I know they changed the rule before that hooking up to the tow truck does not necessarily mean that it's going to eliminate the car via the DVP rule. So maybe change the rule again that if you're on the flatbed, you're still able to continue, same as if you get towed in right now, you're still able to continue via the DVP rules, so long as obviously they can repair the car and make minimum speed. The other advantage of using the flatbed, in addition to not dragging the car across the racetrack, is think about how many times they drag a car across the racetrack and it's leaking oil or some other fluid, and now a local cleanup with some Speedy Dry turns into a mile and a half long strip of Speedy Dry all the way down the racetrack as they try and collect the fluid that drained out of the car as the tow truck was dragging that car back to the pit road or the garage area. So I think a more liberal use of the tow truck and the flatbed, for that matter, I think will probably be a better, quicker, and safer way to get these cars back out of the way, get back racing again, and not make somebody's bad day even worse by tearing up the car in the process.
Tommy.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add here other than I just want to see kind of quicker results so that way they're not running so many caution laps, and the fact that I don't want to see a guy spin out and have a flat tire or two and be like, let's say he was running in the top 5 or 10 like Joey was, and because he spun out and had two flat tires, he's now 6 laps down and the car can't even meet minimum speed because it was towed around the track. I think they definitely need to look into that because it's unfortunate because he spun out, and then it's even more unfortunate because now his car is basically totaled because it had flat tires. I think that they do need to look into that. What the resolution is, I don't know, because, you know, I don't, you know, it sounds nice by Joey saying, oh, they should bring 4 spare tires out there and slap them on right quick. But, you know, like we've all said on here, you can't count on them to put tires on. And it would probably be longer than them towing it, like we're saying. So that's probably not the resolution. But just, you know, look into it. And if it means next year making improvements a different way, then do it and maybe experiment some this year. But, you know, time will tell on that. But I have to actually side with Joey on it with, I think they should look into doing something different.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
Well, I agree that it should be looked into as a way to improve. The flatbed idea, having, again, being at track weekly pretty much, is not necessarily the more expeditious when it comes to that. Mike made a good point, though, of if you get it up on the trailer, it doesn't leave fluid if there's any leaking. But that is also time-consuming and isn't going to save the driver of the team time as far as getting the car back to pit road. We've seen an improvement with what they have on the back of the tow truck now, a bar that picks up the one end as a whole versus just hooking to it. I think we could look into something like that. The other thing in my mind of is a set of, and I don't know how to describe it to fans at home that's in my head, but a dolly of some sort that you could put under the wheels, lift it up so that you got wheels under it and it's not dragging the car and doing more damage, I guess would be my thought process. But I'm with Tommy of at least look into it and try and improve the damage that gets done as you're towing it back, whatever that be. Like I said, I don't know that I necessarily have the idea. something to the effect of, though, like the flatbed, like Mike was saying, under it to prevent fluid from leaking certainly would help. That's a thought too. It's something other than the flatbed, because like I said, having experienced that, the flatbed isn't necessarily expeditious, but does prevent that. So there's some room for improvement. I mean, that's the biggest thing that I would have to agree, as Tommy said, at least look into it and try and improve it.
Yeah, I agree with all of you on that point. I do think that the tire idea sounds good on the surface, as I said before, but there's problems with that. I do think that they do need to look into how these safety guys can be more expeditious and reducing the amount of caution time that they're using. We've said it before that the cautions seem to be extended unnecessarily in some cases, and that they could be doing things in a more expeditious manner. And I think it would be worth NASCAR's time to really look into it and see what can be done differently from the group that cleans up the track and with these guys with the tires. I understand Joey's frustration, but at the same time, I just don't think that's the right solution. And I'm torn on the flatbed idea, too. I just think it might be something that sounds good on the surface again, but it could take up some extra time, and when we're trying to look for ways to reduce that amount of time. I have sad news to also share with you. Mike Orzel's call dropped from the queue, and he's not able to call back in. So we've heard the last that we're going to hear from Mike Orzel. But on any of the other topics, he feels that he's already given his comments on, so we'll try to represent him for any other hot topics that come up. He said all that he wants to hear, except that, sorry guys, I was hoping to hear more Logano salt from Tommy, but he's pretty much said what he wanted to say. So, Tommy, that brings you up for our next hot topic.
Well, the last two we've got are really good, and I'm going to have to pick this one first just because I wanted to go over it, and I hate that Mike doesn't get to put his opinion on this one, too. Let's go over the Austin Dillon Tyler Reddick incident from yesterday.
Okay. Let's see. Jay, that brings you up for the first comment.
All right. Well, I thought I was getting to pick, and I was telling Mike that was my pick, and he put 1,000% AD. So it's 1,000% Austin Dillon's fault. It sure looked like it. This is one of those of borderlines of you want to assign blame or was it a racing deal? But the more you watch the replay, it really looks like Austin Dillon came down. So if you got to point the finger and decide on blame and assign it, yeah, I would have to go with it being Austin Dillon. I'm one that I have a tough time doing that. And again, I spend every week or so at the track, although I'm not the race director, as the announcer, if they ask if I saw anything and have an opinion, it's really tough to make a call. You got two cars or three or four or multiple battling for space, and there's only so much there. You lose a little bit of grip, you slide one way or the other. Whether it was intentional or not, spotter, we don't have spotters, but NASCAR does. I think somebody had put that, or whether or not the spotter could even see in that position where they were at. Tough call, but I think if you had to point the finger and say somebody was at fault, yes, I do think it was more on Austin Dillon than anything. I'm kind of curious, though. It's been a while since we've seen a good helmet throw. The Olympics are coming. Is that a sport in the Olympics now, or are we warming up for that?
Well, I'll tell you what. If it is, Austin Dillon won't qualify for the Olympics because he totally missed the car. I have to agree. This is the second time Austin Dillon has said it was somebody else's fault, and when you watch the replay, he clearly is the only car that moves to a different lane. The the car that he's blaming has stayed the course and never moved from their particular lane. So Austin Dillon needs to kind of stay quiet until he sees a replay and places blame on somebody. And Mike, just to represent him here, says, total clown move. The double down in the interview, Latartan Jr. pretty much said he was an idiot. Mike's words, not mine. And the alleged Little League champ even the helmet out to the second lane before they hit the ground. It was an embarrassing throw. So, yeah, I would agree. I think he lost on both counts, throwing the helmet and also blaming the other driver. Was it, I'm trying to think who the other driver was. Was it Austin? Not Austin, but Ross Chastain?
No, Tyler Reddick, because it was last year's
teammate,
Tyler Reddick.
No, I don't know about Tyler Reddick this week, but there was another incident in a different race. Where exact same thing. He blamed the other driver, and the other driver didn't go anywhere. I think it was Austin Cindric, maybe, that he was blaming. And Austin Cindric never changed his lane, and it was Austin Dillon that changed the lane and hit the other guy. So I think it's kind of embarrassing for Austin Dillon to twice now make that complaint. I'll go back to my high school teacher who said first time's an accident, second time's coincidence. By the time you get to the third time, it's become a really bad habit. And I think that's where Austin Dillon's headed, is to the really bad habit category, because this is twice now that he's blamed the other driver when it's clearly his fault. So he really needs to take a step back and think about it before he starts blaming. Tommy.
It was Austin Cindric and Austin Dillon at Gateway.
Thank you.
But here's my honest thoughts on Austin Dillon, and I got to loop in his brother, Ty Dillon, too. Guys, it's time to retire and become management at Richard Childress. I'm sorry, it just is. I mean, we all said it earlier this year when Kyle Busch was going to start in that 8 car that Austin Dillon was going to be exposed. And here's the thing. I feel like if he does retire or decides to quit, that number 3 car is going to retire too. And if the 3 car staying on the track is Austin, with only Austin Dillon as the driver, I can stomach a few more years of Austin Dillon, but I don't really have much good to say because his few victories, like the Daytona 500 win, only came because he wrecked Eric Almirola to win that race. Was it great to see the 3 car back in victory lane at Daytona? Absolutely. But he didn't do it the clean way. And Charlotte and Texas, his other 2 wins, just straight up luck. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but that's what they were. He won the Coca-Cola 600 on a gas strategy, and he got lucky at Texas like a year or two ago. I mean, just is what it is. But let's get back to the incident. I don't know what he was talking about in the interview because Tyler Reddick was there. I mean, this is literally what Steve Letarte said. He said, I'm not going to tell Austin he's wrong because he just hit the wall going 109 miles an hour, but the 45 car was there. That is literally what Steve Letarte said. And right when I saw that wreck happen, I was just like, I mean, that was on him. He just turned left right into a car that was there and wrecked himself. I mean, maybe he was so mad because he did it to himself. That's the only thing I can think of. And then the interview, the further it, he's like, I'm just going to start wrecking people. You already do that. See Eric Almirola, for example, won. I don't know. I mean, like I said, if he retires, I feel like that 3 car is going to go away. And in my opinion,
the 3 car and the 24 car and the 43 car always need to be on the track. Those numbers never need to leave the track. So if he retires and that 3 car goes with it, I'm going to be sad to see it. So if he's going to be the one that keeps the 3 car alive, then I guess I can put up with a few more years of his crap. But not trying to be ugly, we're probably never going to see that 3 car in victory lane again, at least not with him driving. And if we do, it's either going to be sheer luck or he totaled somebody at Daytona or Talladega to win.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts. Follow up.
Well, we've represented others, so this isn't really necessarily on any particular topic, but Andy also chimed in, so we got to represent Andy, and it says Tommy loves Logano, so just to add that in there.
Oh, yeah.
But I knew I'd seen it somewhere, all of a sudden it popped up. But no, this is one Tommy hit on it, and I don't even think it comes to with Kyle Busch coming over there this year that Austin really got exposed. It was already last year with Tyler Reddick. We saw him win several races. So as Richard Childress says, an organization improved, and Austin Dillon's performance improved as well, but not to the level of winning, contending for races, and the championship. Obviously, with Kyle Busch this year, it's on the same level, if not even above, where Reddick had taken him. So it has gone to another level. And, you know, Tommy mentioned being on the management side. Austin Dillon is the one that apparently initiated that, went to Grandpa with Richard to talk about it and made it happen. You know, maybe that's his role, but he has never been at the Cup level a top weekly contender. I think he is a solid driver, but we've seen that of then, especially when you have a teammate that can come in and win multiple races and contend for the championship. If you have the same equipment and you're not performing to that same level, you've got to take a look at yourself. You know, as we, like I said, as we saw Richard Childress Racing organization improve, his just wasn't as fast. And I know they've made different crew chief changes and different things, and they've never found that right combination back for him, but yet they can bring in a driver from another organization and have that performance. You know, it's black and white. The numbers don't lie.
Very true. I think there's a couple of things. The fact that Steve Letarte very clearly disagreed with Austin Dillon's pick, as did Dale Jr. Those are two very well-respected names in the sport, and they saw exactly the same thing that we saw. And so you can't have that many people seeing exactly the same thing and take Austin Dillon's side on this. But here's the problem. It's really tough for Richard Childress to think objectively when it comes to his grandkids. This is something that he spent a lifetime building up to, and to really take that good hard look at what's going on within his organization with Austin Dillon. They've tried a lot of different things. They still haven't found success. Like you said, some of the wins that he's had have kind of been accidental or, you know, didn't happen in the cleanest kind of way. So at some point, it seems like RC has to take a look at that. And I would think it would be when drivers like people like Steve Letarte and Dale Jr. can see that clearly what Austin said was not exactly what happened. At some point, they've got to see that too, and that they would do something. Now, going back to some of the comments here, Mike, he said even if you give have him 60 points back that they were penalized after Martinsville, they'd still be almost a full race worth of points behind the guy who scored 0 points for 7 races. Kyle Busch has 2 wins, is 6th in points, AD is 30th. Let's not pretend for a second that Pop is given the number 3 any less capable of equipment than the number 8. AD, Austin Dillon, is the poster child for the ills of nepotism. He's a classic example of a spoiled silver spoon kid. You can say similar things about how Elliot Gibbs and others got to where they are, but Elliot has an undeniable resume that he belongs in cup no matter who his dad is, and Gibbs is still new but showing a ton of promise. So, I think there's a lot to be said there. And I hear Tommy about keeping the number three. When he first brought that up, my thought was, God, who would be a person that you could put in the number three that could really do that number justice? That's another whole hot topic, another topic all in and of its own. But, I just think it's time for these guys to really take a good hard look at themselves and make some decisions that can truly build the organization. Kyle Busch is certainly one of those guys that can help them build, but he's not going to be there forever. They need to be looking at their future and what they need to do to truly build that organization, or are they going to let the organization die? I hope not. RCR is a great organization in a lot of respects, and you'd hate to see it die on the vine, but unless they take a good hard look, I think that's exactly what could happen. Tommy, you get the final look here, or final word here.
Well, I think if people could handle it, move Kyle Busch to the three car, if people can handle it. I totally forgot to bring up the helmet throw last go around, so I'm going to bring that up this time. He needs to take notes from Tony Stewart. I mean, that thing bounced. I mean, he threw it, and it didn't even come close to the car, bounced off the ground, and still missed the car completely. And also, Richard Childress even said on the radio the 45 wrecked us. I honestly just think they're still salty with how Tyler Reddick left last year midseason after winning the race at wherever he was to go to 23XI. But, I mean, you got to be delusional if you think that the 45 car wrecked you there. What I saw was a hard left turn into a car that was there and wrecking yourself. But, you know, anyway, that was a terrible throw. He wrecked himself and then said that he was going to start wrecking people. I mean, he made himself look really ridiculous.
Okay, let's see. Do we have time for one more hot topic? Jay, I guess it would be you. Are there any other hot topics to talk about?
I didn't see any others on there, but I did want to follow up on this one of the 3 points. I know, Sharon, you read them from Mike. I'd have to agree with all three of them, actually. The primary one there being, Mike used the term, the silver spoon spoiled brat. That goes back to when Kevin Harvick left Richard Childress Racing and Austin Dillon was first coming in. You know, and I don't know if that's the reason that Kevin Harvick opted to leave RCR, but that was part of it. And that statement comes from Kevin Harvick already back then of that. So, I think you got to look at some things. And I understand, too, we talked about we didn't even get to the other one. The other incident was Ryan Preece and somebody. I think the pressure of the playoffs is building. You talk about Austin Dillon, who has won in the past, made the playoffs. Ryan Preece is fighting for a job for next year. I don't know that it's been officially secured. We kind of anticipate him re-signing. But a lot of these are ones that are in that struggle of not making the playoffs that we're seeing those tensions rise. I think that does play a big part of it. Normally we don't see quite the commotion coming out of Pocono that we did this year. So I really think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Jay. Okay, well then let's go ahead and do our round table here. And Tommy, we'll start with you on our sign off here.
At Sense95Fan on Twitter, thanks for having me back on. It's been a while. I really enjoyed tonight. There was a lot of drama with that one race yesterday at Pocono.
There was. Okay, Jay.
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8, on Twitter and Instagram. And look forward to Thursday. I know we're doing the podcast again as we preview Richmond and Road America. So looking forward to that. Tommy, it was great to have you on. I commended you for your standing behind or standing up for even Joey again. We got to sing it. Tommy loves Logano. Tommy loves Logano.
I don't think so. Okay. Andy did chime in here. He says, well, I don't have a whole lot to say. Then it looks like he turned into the corner and expected Reddick to back out or didn't know he'd still be alongside. It was really just a racing incident. Tyler did not wreck him on purpose. I don't think Tyler wrecked him at all. But, yeah, that's just Andy's thoughts on this. Okay, I am Pam for Racing Site on Twitter, Pam for Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including our website, pamforracing.com, where we have our radio player for fans to listen to our Pam for Racing radio show. So a big thank you to the Pam for Racing crew here tonight. We had Sal Segala on for the earlier part of the show to review the weekend of racing at Pocono. And then, of course, Jay, Mike, Tommy, and myself for our Hot Topic sound-off discussion with a few comments from Andy Lasky through our team's messenger board. Really a great conversation. I always enjoy it and can't wait to do it again for our Thursday show. I did request Jesse Love for tonight and gave Thursday as an alternate time frame. So we'll see if we hear from Jesse Love as to his availability for the Thursday podcast that we are now doing on Thursdays so that we can all watch the SRX races on Thursday night. So, okay, here one more comment from Andy here. Dylan's frustration probably comes as he continually gets outperformed by Busch every week. I think it's time for the Dylan hacks to go away, both of them. So he's referring to Ty as well as Austin Dillon. So that's the final word on the Austin Dillon, Tyler Reddick situation. And a big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoy listening as much as we enjoy doing the show. And, Tommy, it was good to have you back on the show again. We've missed you. And it was good to have a full crew here tonight. I announced it earlier or last Thursday, but I'll go ahead and announce it here tonight as well. Brian Eberle is now going to be a regular on our Hot Topic segment on Thursdays. I talked to him about doing that last Thursday, and he said he can be available and make that work. So expect to hear Brian Eberle on our show on Thursdays for Hot Topics. I know, Tommy, it didn't work out for you for the podcast version, but we hope the Monday night continues to work out for you when we have an opening and that we still get to see you on Monday nights.
Mondays always work.
Okay, good. So let's call it a wrap then for tonight, and we'll look forward to doing the show again on Thursday, and then, of course, a preview of the Richmond races on Monday night next week, starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Let's call it a wrap, guys.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.